So I'm going to move to Genesis now. This is the story of Joseph and his brothers. And before I can read 45, you've got to know the build-up, because it makes no sense if we just leave it here. So I'm going to read you part of Joseph's story. You remember Joseph and the coat of many colors? This is the story. And so it's a great story. Just settle back, do as you do when you're about to hear it, when the skirts of a wonderful story are about to unfold. I'm reading from chapter 37. Jacob settled in the land where his father had lived as an alien, the land of Canaan. And this is the story of the family of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was shepherding the flock with his brothers, and he was a helper to the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. Now, his father loved Joseph more than any other of his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he had made him a long robe with sleeves. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all the brothers, they hated him, couldn't speak peaceably to him. Once, Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. He said to them, "Listen to the dream I dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field, and suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, and your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf." Yeah. His brother said, "Are you indeed to reign over us? Are you indeed to have dominion over us?" And they hated him even more because of his dreams and his words. And they had another dream. And told it to his brother, saying, "Look, I had another dream. The sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me." But when he told it to his father and his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What kind of dream is this that you just had? Shall we indeed bow, I and your mother and your brothers, and bow to the ground before you?" So his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now, his brothers went to pasture their father's flock. And the father said to Joseph, "Aren't your brothers pasturing the flock of Shechem? Come, I'll send you to them." He answered, "Here I am." So he said, "Go now and see if it's well with your brothers and with the flock, and bring word back to me." So he sent him. And he came to Shechem, and a man found him wandering in the fields, and the man asked him, "Who are you seeking?" And he said, "I'm seeking my brothers. Tell me, please, where they are pasturing the flock." And the man said, "They've gone away, for I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. And they saw him from a distance. And before he came near to them, they conspired to kill him. They said to one another, "Here comes this dreamer. Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of the pits. And then we'll say that a wild animal has devoured him, and we shall see what will come of his dreams." But when Reuben, who is the oldest, heard it, he delivered them out of their hands, saying, "Let's not take his life." Reuben said, "Shed no blood. Throw him into this pit here in the wilderness, but lay no hand on him, so that he might rescue of their hand and restore him to his father." So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of that robe, the long robe with sleeves that he wore, and they took him and threw him into a pit. The pit was empty, and there was no water, and then they sat down to eat. And looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels, carrying gum and balm and resin on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brothers, "Oh, what profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him, for he is our brother." And his brothers agreed. So when some Midianite traders passed by, they drew Joseph up, lifting him out of the pit. They sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they took Joseph to Egypt. So when Reuben returned to the pit, saw that Joseph wasn't there, he tore his clothes and returned to his brothers and said, "The boy's gone. Where can I turn him?" Then they took Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, dipped the robe in the blood. They had the long robe with sleeves taken to their father, and they said, "We found this. See whether it's your son's robe or not." And he recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe. A wild animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces." And then Jacob tore his garments, put sackcloth, and mourned for many days. And all his sons and all his daughters sought to comfort him, but he refused. Fast forward. So Joseph is now taken to Egypt, sold into slavery. Long story, he ends up in the court of the Pharaoh. And because he's good with dreams, remember the dreams? Yeah. So he's good with dreams. Pharaoh has a dream. No one can interpret it, but Joseph does. And Pharaoh is so impressed that he, Joseph, is now second in command. The dream led Joseph to believe that it was a prediction that there would be 7 good years of crops and then a famine. So Joseph said, "Stock up the grain. Stock up the grain because bad times are coming." So Egypt did. And as it turns out, Egypt was the only country that had enough food when that famine hit. So now that's where we are in chapter 45. So the father and the brothers and sisters, who never get another mention, are still back in their country, and there's a famine, and now they have to travel. They have to travel for food. And where do they end up? Egypt. They go into the presence of the guy who has the power to decide who gets food and who does not. Who's that? Joseph. They don't recognize him, so here we are. Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all who stood by him, and he cried out, "Send everyone away from me." So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. And Joseph said to his brothers, "I'm Joseph. Is father still alive?" But his brothers couldn't answer him. They were dismayed by his presence. And then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come closer to me." And they came closer. And he said, "I'm your brother, Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourself because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are 5 more years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth, and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God, who has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his own, and ruler over the land of Egypt. Hurry and go to father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me and do not delay, and you shall settle in the land of Goshen.'" And then he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept. And while Benjamin wept on his neck, he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. And after that, his brothers talked with him. So I say this all the time, but it's true, I am amazed by Scripture. And even more amazed when people think that the Bible somehow is passé, or not quite real, that it's only for people who are a little naive or hypocritical or who don't know what real life is about, because I don't know. To me, this is pretty current. In these ancient, and I mean ancient texts, there are themes that are disturbingly current. Just on a macro level, human trafficking for one, child slavery, people traveling to other countries because they just can't eat in their own, And at a personal level, I don't know about you, but this story speaks to my guts. And deeper than I like, actually, if you want to know the truth. Because it's about betrayal, and it's about abuse, and about feeling rejected by your family and not accepted by your brothers and sisters. It's about family favorites, and how much pain can be caused when a parent has a favorite. It's about a little kid being treated cruelly by older people in the family. It's about more than anything in your life wanting the approval of your dad. And it's about the way a family can deal with and maybe even overcome old hurts that are real and deep. It doesn't get more real than that. Bible study is not weakness. It forces you to look at yourself. Scripture is a mirror and makes you look at yourself real. And I don't know if there's part of your heart in this story. Started when they were kids. You heard the story. Joseph, the second youngest, he and Ben, the youngest, were the only two whose mom was Rachel, their father's favorite wife. And whether that had anything to do with it or not, I'm not sure. It must have been hard, though. Their dad, Jacob, had four wives at the same time. It was accepted practice at that time. I know that. But it must have caused jealousy at some level. And if you read the story of Leah and Rachel, you know it. In any case, there were 12 boys and at least one girl in the family, and Joseph was a favorite, and he knew it too. You know, it's the way that writer writes is very good. And he acted like a little brat because he knew he could get away with it. Just for example, he comes to breakfast one morning and says, "Had a dream last night." And the older ones rolled their eyes, gritted their teeth, and exchanged glances as the servants scurried to bring Joseph's breakfast first, leaving the others until later, even though they had been there first. And little Benjamin, who was too young to know better, said, "What was your dream, Joey?" And he said it was really cool. And he took the last piece of toast. I know they didn't have toast. It was really cool. All of you had sheaves of wheat, and so did I, but your wheat bowed down to mine. What do you think it means, Dad? And they couldn't stand it. They couldn't stand him. And they, when they got him alone, they'd tease him and beat him up whenever they thought they could get away with it. But more often than not, he'd go running to their dad, who wouldn't listen to their side at all, and so on. The final straw was that cold. It had long sleeves. Why they keep saying the long sleeves? Because a long sleeve coat is for someone who doesn't work. If you're workers, you have short sleeves because you need your arms. The long sleeves meant he didn't have to work. The final straw was that cold. A gift from their dad to Joseph. None of them had ever received a present like that at all. With 13 kids in the family, things are passed down, and there's no money for extravagant gifts. But the day Jacob presented him with that beautiful coat, just something snapped. And this went way beyond beating him up or name calling. They did that too, but more. First, they were going to kill him. Then they were just going to leave him to die, but they found a way to get some money out of the deal, so they sold him. Took the coat home, ripped it full of goat blood, and let Jacob draw his own conclusions. Joseph's captors took him to Egypt. He was a kid, dragged away from his family, taken to a place he had to learn a lot of things, including a new language and fast. The parallels are too obvious to spell out. We know this story really well. There were years of hard labor and more beatings and false accusation and a consequent jail term. But the worst part wasn't all that. It was the homesickness and the sickening memories of what his brothers had done to him. Sometimes he'd just block it out, you know, in the daytime. But then he'd wake up screaming sometimes and it would all come back and he couldn't keep it out of his dreams. He got really good at dreams. And he used that to work his way to the top, and he did it too. He got to be second in command to the king, the Pharaoh. That was great news. It was amazing. Starting out as a child slave and ending up almost head of a foreign country, he was a success. He was an achiever. Hadn't been easy. The only foreigner in the Egyptian court. Pharaoh thought he was wonderful, but there were those in the court who had been there before who were jealous and resentful. It felt familiar. Because that happens with abuse, doesn't it? You get yourself right back into the same kind of pattern, the same kind of relationship. He hadn't dealt with it, and so he repeated the pattern. His life depended on being strong and being one jump ahead of everyone else. There was no time for thinking and remembering, except for those nightmares and the beginning of an ulcer. Except for that, he was fine. He was just fine. He was strong. He was in control. He didn't need anyone. And who knows how long it would have gone on like that. But then, there they were, his brothers. Something about a famine back home, and did Egypt have any food, and could they buy some? He hardly heard what they were saying, because there they were. There was Simeon and Judah and Levi and Reuben. And was that Gad? And the last time he had seen them had been years ago, and through two swollen and bloody eyes, he remembered their sneers, their laughter, how they used to say to him, "Don't tell, or it'll be worse." And all of a sudden, those feelings came rushing back from everywhere, anger and blind rage, and then excitement, and then confusion, and then wanting to hug them, and then wanting to beat them, and then anger again, and for the first time in years, tears. Tears streaming down his face, and he couldn't stop them, and they didn't even know who he was. They must have thought this ruler of Egypt was completely mad. He ordered everyone else out of the room, turned to them. And there was no easy way to say it. Just out with it. "I'm Joseph. I'm your brother. Is father still alive?" They dropped to the ground, terrified. And only Judah has managed to raise his head enough to nod yes to the question about their father. And then a most revealing comment. "Go back and tell our father that I'm ruler in Egypt." "Dad, tell Dad I'm somebody." You know, he wanted his dad to know he did good. How many people, achievers, ambitious, driven people, rise to the top and it all means nothing to them if their father or mother has not approved? I know it's not the business of the storyteller to psychologize, but oh my goodness. And how many of us would give a great deal to have our parents simply know and acknowledge that we did good? Again, the tears. He was angry. He was furiously angry at them. And yet he wanted desperately to be their brother again. And so he pretended it was all okay. People who have been abused sometimes do that. They say, "Oh, it's okay. It was God's plan. It was not you who sent me here, but God," Joseph says. Sometimes people, in trying to cope with horrible things, say to the others or to themselves, "It's God's plan, someday we'll understand." God does not do that. God can and does bring good things out of the worst circumstances. That is without doubt. But that is not the same thing as saying God planned those circumstances or caused them to happen. God did not make Jacob choose Joseph as a favorite. God did not make those brothers abuse himself and as a slave. You cannot excuse yourself or someone else by saying that it was part of God's plan. And you don't get rid of years of fear or anger or resentment by saying that. First, it isn't true. Second, it doesn't work anyway. Even if it were true. Here's what I think about. Or should have. I think it took a lot of mixed up going back and forth. We'll read the whole account, that's true, you can see. Before the family was truly bound together. There must have been tears and accusations and game playing and confession. Jacob, I hope, confessed his mistake in having made Joseph the favorite. And he told his kids, his other kids, for the first time about how much he loved Rachel and how Joseph reminded him of her and how he'd been clinging to her memory through him. And they'd never heard their dad talk that way before, and they never... It made them think of him differently somehow. And Joseph confessed how he had, part of him had loved all the attention and had played off his brothers against each other and their father, how he enjoyed their jealousy, but he also told them about how lonely he had been as a kid and how he really wanted to be asked to join them in a game or to share a joke. And he told them how it felt to be left out, the perfect son, daddy's little man. He told them some of the pain of betrayal at being sold. He could never have told it all. And something of the struggle to put it all behind him and make something of himself. And each brother confessed the pain of knowing that his father loved someone else more than him and asked forgiveness for the horrible act of violence against their brother. And I hope that one by one, and not perfectly, but they asked forgiveness of one another and for God. And there were more tears and some laughter too, finally, as they began to see one another for what they really were, fragile, lonely, flawed men who needed more than anything the care and love that only they could give each other. That's the will of God. That's the hand of God bringing life out of death. We are not Joseph, and we are not Jacob. We are not one of the 11 brothers or their sister Dinah. We have not literally been sold by our brothers, at least most of us have not. But each of us has parents. Some of us have brothers and sisters, and we know what it is to want more than anything else the love of a parent or someone else who is simply, at that time, incapable of giving it. And we know what it is to feel betrayed and sold out by those who are closest to us, people we thought were family and friends. Some of us know physical and mental abuse. Some of us are parents who can make or break a child by favoritism, or whose heart has been broken and torn apart by the loss of a child, and who is a child in lots of ways. This is so real. This is so real. And mostly it speaks for itself, except for a call to what is truly God's will in the midst of complicated family relationships. Abuse is wrong. It is never God's will. It is never God's will. It is sin, and it needs to be named and confronted. What Joseph's brothers did to him was wrong, and it had to be talked about and confessed and acknowledged. Forgiveness is never easy. Luke talks about forgiving your enemies. It's never easy. It seldom happens quickly. The heart seems to have its own timing about that. Humanly speaking, a strong route to forgiveness seems to be through honesty and coming to see each other as real human beings, ultimately children of God. But finally, it's a gift from God, whose will is healthy, life-giving relationships among us. When we gather here on a Sunday morning, this is not some quaint ritual from another time. This, what we do, is a profound showing forth of God's will, a profound statement, a revolutionary act, a sign and a promise. We gather at the table. Sometimes we gather here, where the table is open and this place is open and everyone is welcome. Joseph and his brothers, their sister Dinah, their parents, all their parents, the Ishmaelites who bought a child for profit, they're all here too. There's in the mystery of God, we're all here. The Venezuelan people at the border, the people trying to keep them, all of us together in some mysterious way. The ones who turn their damage into hate, and the ones who in turn are damaged by that hate, everyone is here, and the system that feeds it all. In all our fragile, frustrating, heartbreaking humanity, in our brokenness, we gather here, and God meets us and says, it's not too late. It's not too late to build a better world. It's not too late to change, and it's not too late to be more open and to see one another real. God says, let me love you and feed you. Let's rehearse And when we gather, let's rehearse. This is a rehearsal for the day when all of creation will come home. May God bless you as you think about these things. Amen.